And we are live today with Carl Walker. Bro,
Paul, how you doing,
thank
mate?
You so much, man.
No
I really appreciate
problem.
It.
Anytime,
you know, just from like from you sending me the birthday message.
Yeah.
Like you really didn't need to do that, but I really appreciate it, man. That's
anytime,
why I threw it
yeah.
up on my system and just like, yeah, I'm blessed to call you a friend now, you know.
Thank you very much.
Nah,
anytime,
it's good,
same.
Man.
Vice
so,
versa.
Yeah, so this is an exclusive. You've never done one of these before.
No, it's first time, mate. First time for everything.
Yeah,
you got
people hunting you for this podcast.
Indeed,
as well,
yeah. About two or three people. Now I've had the fourth one out there, but as promised, you're the main man yourself, so
I appreciate
you come
it,
first, mate.
Thank you so much.
Not a problem, anytime, buddy.
So I know a little bit about you, but just take us back to the beginning of where you want to start with all this. So just give us a little bit of a...
Not many, I'm a known face, but not many know about me. There's no deep about me, but just a Belfast man who came over to England for a fresh start. Living life good, mate. Meeting good people. Enjoying myself, you know. Can't get any better, to be fair. Doing a bit of training. Yeah, just going through the ropes. Getting really plant my feet in England and see what it's like. I'm
yeah.
enjoying it.
How long have you been here for?
I've been here now about 3.5, 4 years. 4 years max. In England, yeah, all the way from Belfast.
Mm-hmm. What made you leave Belfast?
A lot of trouble, Paul, to be honest. A lot of trouble back home. Just with the community and stuff, what goes on over there, and the certain people I was with, etc. Just big fallouts and stuff wasn't going too well. And they're involving my family, they're involving my mum and dad. The police were harassing me, they're harassing my family. They're kicking my mum's door through 3-4 times a week on a daily basis. Just mental torture and mind games, and jealous, envy people just trying to mentally torture me till the point of explosion. But me and my dad was not going to let that happen, so we took stuff into our own hands, done what we had to do. And then we finally built up the courage and was man enough to pack our stuffs and come over to England for a fresh start. Or else it was going to get very out of hand, very nasty, and stuff wasn't going to go down too well for anyone, including myself and my dad. So, yeah, once that started happening, the harassment and the police and the troubles and what was going on, then me and my dad got proper deep into it together, like father and son would, stuck by each other, and gave the war back, and then we're finally, it built up on my mum too much till the point where it was putting her down a lot. So, you know, she was getting stressed, she was getting down, she was getting depressed everywhere she was going. She wasn't enjoying life. So me and my dad, we seen this and we didn't like it, seeing my mum upset all the time. But we were just men, we were just doing what we were doing, fighting back. But then my dad said, son, you know, it's enough. You know, your mum is not happy. You know, it's time to start fresh. And get a new life. So that's what happened, mate. Then I'm here in England now, living it fresh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big difference. I've been to Belfast myself, and it's like living on the edge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's living on the edge a lot, mate. Yes, a lot. Well, what can I say? You're living on the edge. You're stuck between a lot of people who hate each other for the wrong reasons.
Mm.
You know, people who I went to school with. You know, who were my friends, and then later on in life, have become your enemies, or become people you don't get on with over something so petty. You know, as people probably watching this would know themselves, Belfast has their own reputation of its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very clicky in that situation.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of tattoo conventions in Belfast,
yeah.
the Titanic Centre and stuff like
That's
that.
That's right, yeah.
And we'd literally landed there. The day after a riot just finished, and there was this nice, because Ireland was nice, right?
It's lovely.
There's this nice estate, and there was like 3-story houses and stuff there, and there was like a really nice house. Then there was a nice house next to it, and then the one next to that was like set on fire.
Yeah.
And then it was a nice house again, and another nice house, and then there was like 3 houses set on fire on the other street.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, how did so many houses? I said, what happened here? And they said, you just missed the riot. And I was like, what? But the day that we left,
yeah.
But it was like everybody lived like it didn't happen.
Like that's because it's normal over
yeah.
there. Oh, it's normal. It's normal.
I couldn't believe it.
It's like for example here, example over England, when something goes down, kind of what people would class as massive over in Ireland where I'm from, it's small.
Mm-hmm.
So like people over in Ireland are getting kneecaps shot, are getting stuff seriously done to them.
They've got a six pack.
No, it's a three pack.
Three pack.
Yeah, knees, elbows, and wrists. You know, back your knees. You're at two elbows, two hands.
What would you have to do for something like that to happen?
Either steal, drug deal, cause anyone with a bit of a reputation or a name, any of their family members, pain, do something that you shouldn't be doing, selling drugs in the local community.
That's a big thing that over there, isn't it?
It's a massive thing, yeah. Massive.
They don't like anyone selling any sort of hard drugs over there, do they?
Nothing at all. There's places in Ireland where people can't even sell prescription medications, such as like people would take, maybe people over England here would take maybe a Zoplicon or a Valium or something at night time to go to sleep. Over in Ireland, if you'd done that there, some of the men would come through your door and put two in you while you're in bed, you know. So it's very serious over there, especially in certain communities.
Maybe, why is it so anti-drug there?
It's only anti-drug, Paul, I think, in the Catholic areas of Ireland, you know, because in the Protestant areas, it seems to be like a, not that I would know too much about it, but the hearsay on the street, there seems to be that the Protestants have more of a say on the drugs, and a lot of money comes from that direction, you know, and they produce a lot of men to do stuff like that. But obviously, as people know from the troubles in Ireland, the Catholic men were big men fighting for the country. So it was just mainly for that one cause, you know. So it was mainly the Protestant side what was getting up to all that badness. And then the Catholic side was still fighting for the cause, what they were fighting for 40, 50 years ago.
How easy is it for you to have been pulled into that lifestyle?
Very easy. Very easy. One phone call. One phone call would have pulled you in that lifestyle. One phone call, and the one phone call would have been, can you do me a favour? That was it. That can you do me a favour would put you in that lifestyle for the rest of your life. Some people.
Especially if you're good at it.
If you're very good at it, yes. If you're very good at it and you know what you're doing, and people see potential in you, and you're a smart man, and you keep your head down, and you do what you have to do, and they see that you're doing the right things, and you've got potential, then you can be pulled into that lifestyle very fast. And what they'll do is they'll basically just use and abuse you and get what they can out of you and make you do what they want you to do, you go and do. Because everyone's trying to impress the bigger boys, ain't they?
Yeah.
In some people's eyes, you know, some people's eyes, they look up these people and want to be their heroes, don't they? But in reality, it's just...
They're using you.
Yeah, they're using you. Yeah, and they're bringing pain to your family and obviously yourself. But at that stage, whenever you get asked for that certain favour, like you said, being dragged into that lifestyle, you know, it's more, people start off because it's more of a cool thing to do, you know, but they don't think of the bigger picture, especially when they get a little bit older. And there's no way of turning back, because once you're in it, you're in it,
yeah,
Paul, you know.
The more game you are, the more, and you're a game fucker, ain't you?
Yeah, I'm as game as they come, so it's very hard for me to bite my tongue. You know, there's been a lot of accusations and stuff back home of myself, but all accusations, like Paul, you know, never know charges enough and just dial silly stuff. But then again, if you're a big lad like me who walks around 16 stone natural, 6'2", with a lot of tattoos and stuff, people's going to try and bring you into the game and stuff, you know.
You got presence. You have got presence. Yeah. You know, I get that myself. You have the tattoos on the face and stuff.
Yeah.
And you, when you come into the venue here, I see people just turn around and look at you straight away, you know.
Yeah.
So you definitely get picked out without even doing anything straight away.
I do get a lot of that there, Paul, everywhere I go. A lot of presence when I walk into places, to certain places I walk into. And people just stop sometimes. So when I'm walking in, I can feel the crowd like slowing down.
Yeah.
And when I'm turning around, I can feel the faces and people on me. I don't know whether they're looking at the tattoos or they're looking at the size or what they're looking for, but I can feel my presence is welcomed in the building, you know. So yeah, it's been like that for many years though, Paul, to be fair. I bought a box for 13, 14 years, you know.
You started in Ireland, yeah?
I started in Ireland, yeah, I did. a little club called Bambridge ABC, Bambridge Amateur Boxing Club. Mm. I still got the jacket to this day, very first club. So my dad was the head coach. My dad taught me how to box, taught me how to fight, brought me down to a boxing club, and then eventually became one of the head coaches of the boxing club.
Oh, wow.
And we're stuck in there together, me and my dad side by side for 13 years. And yeah, done nothing but box and fight three, four. And my dad had the key, so sometimes it's five, six times a week. Mm. You know, so I've many titles, glove boxing, amateur boxing, may I add. You know, so I've many fights and titles behind my belt under that. And then once my name was getting about the town, and once people were firing it around, and I was a bit of a handy kid.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of the bigger lads started hearing, you know, here that card one's a handy kid, etc. And then, you know, they're lifting the phone up, you know, Carl, can you do this? So I wouldn't do it. I said, nah, that's not me. I'm not getting involved in your business. So what they would normally do is send their right-hand man down, their handyman, to come and sort the hearsay handyman out. So he would have came down.
Kind of make you find your place again.
Yeah.
Yeah, know what level you're at.
Yeah. So when he came, that happened before, you know, a man tried to pull me into his little circle. And he's actually dead now, to be fair, so I can't speak about him. He pulled me in, he got shot six times. He tried to pull me into his little circle. And he phoned me up and he wanted me to do some bad stuff to a certain person, but I knew the man. So I said, no, I'm not getting involved in none of that. It's nothing to do with me. It's not my business. I'm just trying to stay out of trouble, look after my family, my mum, my dad, simple as that. So because I said no, he didn't like the word no, as these bigger lads don't. So he sent his right-hand man down, his fist man down to sort me out. So I was out the front of my house. I was speaking to my mum, seeing a red BMW coming up the street of living. A lad jumped out. I knew what he was coming down for because I already got the phone call to say he's
did
coming.
Did you know the guy by face?
I knew the guy. The guy used to be one of my best mates. He used to be one of my best friends. I looked up to him for many years until he started turning that path and that lifestyle. And then I kind of backed off from him.
Yeah.
And then he carried on, earning his big ego tough name, you know, when there's nothing tough about it. But he carried on doing what he was doing. So when I got, he was coming down to sort me out. I knew it was going to be a bit of a handful because I know I looked up to the man. He was a handy lad, you know. But when he got out of the car, I says, okay, no problem. You're here, whatever. There's a green outside in front of my mum's, big enough for both of us. We'll go out and we'll have a go. So we went out, we had a go. I got the better of him. The police came. He got dragged back into his car. I still stood in the green. I got arrested. And then 2 days later, the head man who organised the fight in the first place phoned me and said, oh, I hear you got the better such and such. I heard you beat such and such. I said, I wasn't sad. I said, it was a good fight. And he said, oh, well, how's that to be my right-hand man now? Because I'm getting rid of him. I said, nah. I said, idiot. So what the plan was because I said no in the first place,
yeah.
He sent his right-hand man down to say, right, well, you mustn't be that handy because I'm going to send someone down now to show you what handiness is.
Yeah.
So once he came down and I gave him a good run for his money, the other guy kind of, you know, he was shook a little bit. So, he asked me to join his little crew and I just told him to do one, Paul, you know. Told me to do one. My mum was more important than that, man. So that was a big break. And my mum was there watching it. She was there watching it the whole time, you know. So that's one moment I'll never forget because she was roaring and shouting and she couldn't do nothing because she's a disabled woman.
Mm.
But held my own and we're both fighting like two dogs. And and that was it. And ever since, I was left alone for a while. But then once I said no to the bigger boys, then the bullying tactics started.
Yeah.
You know, as you probably don't know about over there, but them connections, they have a lot to do with, like, the police force are very afraid of the connections in Northern Ireland because they've got the addresses of policemen's houses, they've got the names of the family members, they've got the kids' names, any detail you want about anyone over there, certain men can get them.
Don't some of the police officers have to wear balaclavas and stuff so they don't know who they are?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Some of the... Well, it got to a stage back home where the police officers from our local branch had to move out to a different branch completely. And they had to bring in police officers from a totally different county.
Outsiders, yeah.
Outsiders into our town slash city where we were. So none of us would know who they were, and none of them would know who we was.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, there's faces and there's names and there's houses they knew. Mm-hmm. But when they used to come to your door, it was never like, you know, I'm off. It was always mask on, machine guns, your door was going through. It was never knock, knock, knock. Hello, can you open the door?
Yeah.
You know, and it got to that stage and it was too much. It wasn't too much for me or my dad. No, we'd stand there all day and take it. It was too much for my mum, you know, and that's what hurt me. It was my mum. But the police were only doing that to me is because I said no. The word no to certain bigger men didn't like that because the alpha male is like this.
Yeah.
You say no to them.
Well, as soon as they feel, when you're at the top of your game, you're almost feeling invincible. So when someone challenges that, they've got to take you out before you take them out.
Yeah.
Because they feel like, even though you weren't, you didn't want that top spot,
yeah,
they feel like they're going to have to do something, because if you're taking their right-hand man out,
yeah, yeah,
they're next.
Exactly. And that's what the point he tried to prove was, he thought he was sending down his right-hand man in the car, his handy fist man, to come and sort me out in a straightener to try and make it out, saying, well, that's okay, Carl. I don't need you because I've got him. And I'm going to show you I've got him because he's on his way down to fill you in.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he heard it was a bit of a handful, you know, he got rid of his handyman because he was, yeah, no good to him no more.
Yeah.
Because I've already shown him now, listen, the handiest man you have with his fist, you know, it was a fight. It was a good 15, 20 minute fight.
Yeah.
So he's not that handy.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he got rid of him because he's no good to him no more. So he started trying to beg and provoke me onto his lifestyle, and it wasn't for happening. But that man we are talking about now is currently dead. He was he got shot 6 times a year and a half ago. So he did. I think it was 4 in the chest and 2 in the head in broad daylight, about 3:45 in the daytime. Yeah.
In the day?
In the daytime. Well, behind a garage, like.
Is that because someone was trying to take his spot, or because he just pushed his luck too much?
He pushed his luck too much, mate, to be honest with you. He was treading on people's toes he shouldn't have been treading on. He was getting too big for his boots. He had some numbers behind him, and because he had these numbers behind him and these people running and doing what he said at the click of his fingers, he thought he could try and take over the town or city, you know, and it wasn't working like that because at the end of the day, the biggest man who probably is behind it all is probably some old man in the pub sitting in the corner by himself.
That you wouldn't even expect.
That you wouldn't even expect. Drinking a pint by himself with a walking stick. That's the man you got to watch out for. Not the dickhead like me walking around with a bit of size and a few tattoos. You know what I mean? Hence why the lads like me are normally the door knockers.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean? This is how they managed to take down the mafia. In America, yeah, because they were all under wraps. They were all like just normal old men, just looking the day to day, and they were absolutely fine. And then John Gotti got on the scene, and he was like the big fur coats, and he was flashing, and he was in the newspapers, and he was turning up to the clubs, and the attention drew to him, which then opened up everybody else, and that's how come he ended up getting.
Well, I watched a few podcasts and that. I watched a podcast on Michael Francis.
Yeah,
and
what a guy.
And the bowl,
at
the table together, and they were talking about the mafia over the table, like a pet talk. So I watched that there.
Yeah,
on
it's
the
pretty
podcast.
Crazy. They're, when them two get together,
See, to be fair, mate, what that sort of lifestyle with them mafia over there live. Some people may laugh, and some people can relate, but only the Northern Irish people can relate. It's something similar to the way that we live. And lived over there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know with the way like the rules was given out? Well, rules were accepted, and you had to speak to this person before you could do this, or you had to go and ask this person for permission to go and do this, or you could, you know, you go to certain people to certain men to lift certain things. That's the sort of stuff, the sort of routine that that some of the Irish lads and the paramilitaries and the IRS stuff had over there.
Yeah, they hold a very strict routine.
Very,
the
difference is, Paul, the IRA hold a strict routine, but the Protestant side hold a strict routine when it comes to the drug scene and the money scene. They're interested in the drugs and money, but obviously the Catholic side are more interested in doing what they're doing.
What side would you say is more ruthless?
Depending on what situation. When obviously, like I said, when it comes to the money situation and stuff, obviously it would be the Protestant side because they've got big numbers, they're very demanding, they use bullying tactics, and they're very ruthless because they haven't got a close, strong Irish Catholic family. They're all just mixed around. So like some's been in prison, some ain't got families at all. You know, it's like where the Irish, where the Catholic side is, has a strong family, will stick together, like go to mass, good at like an Irish family, have dinner, Sunday dinner together, stuff like that there. So yeah, so the Irish side, the Catholic side would be more family oriented.
So you can trust more.
You can trust, yeah. So you can trust your family more at 110% on that side. And the other side are just interested in what you can do, how fast you can do it, how quiet you can do it, and how much money you can make from it for them.
Mm.
And whatever consequences that you get.
I feel like there'd be a lot more secrets that side amongst themselves.
There's a lot of secrets, yeah.
Where with the family-based stuff.
Yeah.
You know everything that's going on because everyone can talk within that unit.
Yeah. There's a lot of secrets what goes on, Paul, to be honest, behind the scenes. And what really opened my eyes was I went into a house party once, and this was like the Protestants I'm talking about. And there was during a Good Friday Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You ever hear of it? The lads got out. Well, there's men in the house party and they were sitting, walked in the living room. I kind of took back from it because the only time I seen these men was on the news, in news or paper articles. And there was maybe three, four men in that room who got out in a Good Friday Agreement who were killers, who were convicted bad men. So I was sitting maybe drinking with them for one, two nights, having a laugh and joke. And to be fair, it's the worst atmosphere in the world. You could have cut everything, you know, because they didn't know me. Well, they knew me, they knew of me, they knew my name, they knew what it was about. But because I wasn't as deep or I wasn't involved as they were, it was like, don't say nothing in case, in case we say the wrong thing. We know this lad, we know what he's about. If anything happens, maybe we can maybe get him to knock that door. But, you know, when it comes to the money side, everyone keep their mouth shut because, you know, he's not getting a piece of our cake.
Mm.
He can stay in the background, you know, just use and abuse. And I wasn't having none of it, mate, no chance. I'm not going to be no one's puppy dog, you know. That's just the way it is. My dad's always taught me that. You know, he says, you don't answer to no one apart from your mum and dad. And that's the way I've always lived my life.
It's true.
Yeah. I never answered to no one, Paul. Never. Not the biggest man in the town phoned me and demanded stuff. And I still said to him, no, no, no chance. Even though I was shaking in my boots because I knew the consequences of what was going to happen to my mum's house and my dad's house. But at the end of the day, my mum and dad already would know what's going to happen, but they already know that down the line, if you said yes, you're still down the line, it's going to happen anyway, regardless. So once you're in with them, you're not getting out, because either way they're going to use your bullying tactics, so you might as well say no at the start, knock it in the head and say, right, well, if you've got something to do, do it now, you know. But all I can say, if anyone's in that position, is bite your tongue, stick together as a family and fight back just like me and my old man did, you know, and we walked away just absolutely fine, you know, and that's because me, my dad and my mum with a strong mentality, we all stuck together, you know what I mean, and we didn't rely on no one because my dad didn't trust no one at this stage. I didn't trust no one at this stage, you know. My dad's an accomplished man now. He's a businessman, a very, very smart man. But this stage in life, he was kind of a bit on that slope because of all what was going on. And at one stage, he was sleeping with a loaded shotgun beside his bed and under his pillow for near a year because the door was coming up the stairs three, four times a week. You know, I had sleeping stabbed proof vest, machete, you know, a motorbike helmet. And at one time, I can remember going to the top of the stairs, motorbike helmet on, a stabbed proof vest and a machete, standing on top of the stairs saying, right, only one is can get up the stairs at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on up. And I guess some man, one of the lads looked up and he turned around. They were tripping over each other down the stairs. because I said, listen, the waterfall came in and everyone would have been sleeping. But no, me and my dad's too smart. We already had it all planned out. So once anyone came in, we had certain traps, certain days, escape out. It was war for me and my family. You know what I mean? Not just myself. My dad was in it with me too. And he stuck by me the whole way and got me out of some situations that I shouldn't really got out of. And that was all due to my dad speaking sense into me, but also standing by me through all the bullshit going on.
Sounds like a good guy, man.
He is a good guy. He's a very good guy. And then when we moved here, the best about it, Paul, we moved here, mate, and now he's a fully accomplished man. He's a manager of a very, very big business, and he's a very, very happy man, and he gets on with his life now in peace.
Has he ever spoke to you about, like, because obviously now he don't sleep with a loaded shotgun. Has he ever said to you, like, do you know what's good about being here is, like, not having that shotgun beside me anymore?
To be honest, no. He's never had that heart-to-heart with me where he's been like, you know, son, you know, he's never had that heart-to-heart with me in that way. It's when my dad spoke to me, it's always been, I tell you what, son, we're lucky to get out of that one, you know, or I tell you what, son, that could have went bad. He's always spoke like that, my dad. He's never been like a conversation man like this. Only when I've done something wrong. And then he would say, sit down, and I would speak to him and he'd say, son, listen, think about it. You know, you can't be doing that because of this. You can't be saying that because of this. You can't be going there because of him. You know, use your brain. My dad would be more into using his brains. He's a very intelligent man. So, no, the most things he would say is the best thing he ever done was move his family back to England. Because my dad's originally from England.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was born where we're living now. He was born in that town and raised in that town.
Oh, wow.
Until he moved to Ireland. 24 years old he was. He shipped his family to Ireland, like, so. But he was originally born and bred where we are now. So there's none of us, like, we just came here. No, my dad took us back to his hometown where he's born, bred and raised up. And, you know, that's where it was. And my mum and dad, they're heroes in my eyes, because at the end of the day, it was going to end two ways. Me and my dad would end up going to, someone was going to be killed. Either me, him or somebody else. Mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't going to be us two, because we had it all planned out, you know what I mean? Unless anyone caught us slipping, but they didn't catch us slipping because my dad already told me, son, don't be going there. And if you're going here, make sure you change your route every time. So if you're going to a shop, you walk that way. Don't walk the same way back. Because someone spots you walking that way, they're going to wait for you down there.
Yeah.
And then they're going to come back up when you walk back, and then they're going to jump out and crunch you. So every time you go out, change your route, change your destination. So we're living like that for years, Paul, on edge. Not on edge of fear, on edge because we're smart. You know, it was on edge because we knew what was on the line, basically. And me and my dad were ready to do some serious stuff if these people didn't leave us alone, you know. And a lot of people watching this know all about it and know all the names and they know everything what's went on. So it's very, very good that people watching this now will sit back and watch this and can clarify everything I'm saying. Because as you know yourself, I'm speaking to me, Paul, I'm a very outgoing man. Mm-hmm. No, there's no bullshit comes out of my mouth. And I just said how it is, basically.
How do you think they will hear the message that you, though?
Well, to be fair, half of them's in prison, as expected. And the ones who have had problems with me and has tried to as you make my life, my family's life, and my life misery are now either are dead or else have put the rope up, else have died of drug overdoses. Mm. So a lot of the lads who was putting the pressure on me and who I was fighting against, who I was at war against, basically, me and my dad with these men, half of them's in jail, half of them's been shot dead, and the other half's died of maybe, you know, hanging themselves due to certain stress of certain people, or else sniffing themselves to death, or else taking too many pills. So at the end of the day, if you look at the bigger picture, you know, my dad was right all along. You know, stick together, son, we'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So the lads listen to this now. A couple of them will have their hairs up in the back, growling, staring at the camera. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sitting here with a bunch of new friends, a new lifestyle, new lads, loving life, met new people, you know, have a good, solid family.
Yeah.
My dad's happy. My mum's happy. All my pals are happy. You know, everyone around me is happy. makes me, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. So anyone who's watching this now can watch in ego, can watch in spite, can watch in anger, can watch in frustration. But at the end of the day, you know, Carl's beat you regardless, you know what I mean? So all your bullying tactics didn't work, you know, because when it came to fists, I sword yous out. When he came through my door, me and my dad done yous. When it got that bad, they used to phone the police and tell the police that there's drugs in the family's house just to get the police to kick a door through so they can mentally torture. And they're doing that 3-4 times a week. You know what I mean? They're phoning up death threats at one point. And get like the police come to your door with like a yellow page with like a death threat on it. So they say, Mr. Carl Walker, yeah, well, we've got a death threat from you. And the name, the group, etc., who it came from. And at one stage, Paul, it got that. There's that many coming through the door. It got that bad where I seen the police walking in with the yellow sheet. And as soon as I seen the yellow sheet, I just put my foot in the bin. And I says, put it in the bin. And there's selections of them. And the policeman went, there's a lot of them in this bin. I said, exactly. I says, and what have they done? I says, you're bringing another one. I says, next time, don't even bring them. And my dad says, yeah. He says, there's no need for him. There's no need for him to be here. So stop calling. But what they were doing was they're phoning in silly little folks' calls.
Yeah.
You know, because they didn't have the goonies to come through the doors and do what they had to do. And that's the way it was, because I knew fine rightly what my dad was about and what I was willing to do. Because I know I have a big heart. I know I have a big set of goonies, and my dad also has too. So if they want war, if they wanted war, they got war. Mm-hmm. For 1.5 years, they got what they wanted. We gave it to them. Two men against a group of 40, 45 men. You know what I mean? And half of them 45 men now are 6 feet under, or else are stuck in jail. You know? So and now me and my family's over in England, living our happy lives with a good bunch of people.
Those that stay positive prosper.
Yeah, and I tell you what, you're right about that. And I'll tell you, without it all, Paul, I've never said to my dad in person, but without it all, I must thank my dad for it, because without him giving me that pet talk and that old school have a think first, son, I'd have probably been maybe done myself, or I'd have probably done somebody else, or I'd have probably been stuck in behind bars. So without my old man telling me, son, calm down. This is what we're going to do. Calm down. This is how we're going to handle this situation. Calm down. This is what you're going to say. Without his old school mentality, he's been about the block attitude. Mm-hmm. Without that, you know, I probably won't be sitting here talking to you today. So I must thank my old man for that there. So, yeah, he saved me in that way. 100% he has. Old school mentality. Superman.
What do you think you'd say if you was to pull him up and say it to his face?
What would he say if I pulled him up? He would just say, he'd probably just say, that's what dads are for. And that's all he would say. Like, my dad's not a gloater, and he's not like, he's not big headed. If you give him a compliment, you know, you'll see his face going red and stuff, because he's endured it. You know, he likes his fishing and that. So if you say, oh, that's a nice fish, you know, you'll, cheers, son, but that's what he said, cheers. But you'll see, you look around, you see his face, and he'll be red, and he'll be smiling, and, you know, he'll really suck it in. But he's not that sort of gluten man. So, you know, at the end of, I have said to him before, here, Dad, thanks for that there, you know, I tell you what, I'm glad you told me that, because I was going to do this, you know what I mean? Out of fast reactions, you know what I mean? I was going to seriously hurt him, Dad. And Dad said, no, son, that's
probably why you survived right away through it, to be honest with you. You know, like, yeah, I do this many times after losing my brother and stuff. Like, you know, the fact that they never thought about what they'd done, even as they were doing the crime, and then the after effects of the crime,
yeah,
is like 2.5 seconds got them 70 odd years in jail.
That's it.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Literally, so
2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Of quick.
Yeah, and to be fair, mate, I don't think that sentence is good enough for them, Paul.
I agree.
You know, as simple as that, there. Like my dad always says, what he always said, you know, a life's a life. So if you take someone's life, you know, they should, you know, what gives them the right to be to be living in a, as people now sit in a nice class as a 5-star hotel, you know? But he's just like, that's the old school morals, you're right. So if I'd said to Dad, yeah, my dad, listen, you're right, he'd always say, I told you so. Or else I'd say, here, Dad, you know, you saved my life there. You know, I appreciate that. He just say, that's what dads are for. You know what I mean?
Do you think, like, when you are starting out to have a family in Ireland, and you find out your missus is pregnant and stuff, and then you find out the sex of the baby, and for a father, they turn around and tell you it's a son.
Yeah.
Is it like? Oh no.
No, I think it's worse with a girl. With are you on about like the Irish thinking?
Yeah, well, it's I get the whole thing with a girl. You're like, oh no, yeah, boy, stuff like that. But
yeah.
I guess when you're having a boy, and especially with the way that you know as a father how you're going to bring your son up,
yeah,
to how people in the environment live that certain way,
yeah,
yeah. So you lived in Ireland. Yeah. They look for game people all the time. You're going to grow up under a strong man that teaches you like the way it is.
Of course, yeah.
You obviously know that if you're a boy in most things, you're going to get him into sports box and stuff like that. You're going to get recognised by people.
Like my dad done with me with the boxing.
Exactly, you know, then it gets recognised by people that it shouldn't get recognised by.
Yeah.
And then you're drawn in. But with a girl, she's going to end up dating a guy that is like that, but she's not actually going to be like that. Do you understand what I mean? When you have a girl, you know her future's okay as long as you can guide her right to make the right decisions. But with a son, that's a path that he's going to end up, no matter how much advice you give to someone. You had to have the respect for your father to listen to him, right?
100%. And
you
did. Yeah, I did indeed. Yeah. Right,
and that works for you because you're here today.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, only just as well, Paul, with the way my dad was speaking, sometimes I used to think, oh, that man's nuts, you know, this has just happened to me. You know, I've been stabbed here, and, you know, and my old man wants me to sit back and relax. You know, and when I'm thinking, hold on a minute, you know, Dan, this ain't good. This ain't going the way he's thinking. Mm-hmm. But when I have listened, he's always been right. So I can vouch that one, you know. But, yeah, so, yeah, you're right. When having a son, he's like you said, and a facial figure growing up, and my dad got me into boxing and stuff, and people recognise you for the wrong reasons. And I see you're a bit of a big lad and a bit of a handy lad, and they can say, oh, we can make a few quid out of this fella. Well, so I'll tell you what, we'll bring him to the local nightclub, and if anything kicks off, you know, Lisa's around, you know what I mean? Bit of muscle and bustle.
And then you find them people that want you around, and they use you for that thing. So, yeah, you're my pal. I'm going out tonight, but I can't go out because that person over there, I know that it will get me. I know. Yo, you coming out? Yeah, all right, come on, I ain't got no money. That's all right, I'll pay for everything. And you think to yourself, oh, they're my friends, they want me out.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're doing 12 years in jail.
Yeah, you're right, yeah, with one splint of a second. You're right, mate, 100%.
And then they're not messaging you. They're not paying for nothing. They're not coming to visit you.
No.
You're gone. They're carrying on with their life and not even think twice about what you've done.
They've replaced you. Mm-hmm. As soon as you've got arrested, and they've heard you got arrested, you've been replaced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they probably have already a backup person already.
Yeah, just like the right-hand man when you beat him.
Exactly.
He was replaced and he was a right-hand man.
Yeah, so what was his game was, right, who's the toughest lad to have as my right-hand man?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll send him down, and if he wins, I'll keep him. But if I send him down and Carl wins, we'll replace him with him then, and we'll just chuck the other lad away. You know, and that's the same situation as we're speaking about. But you're right, you don't see nothing from them. You know, they use and abuse you and just make your life misery for the wrong reasons.
Probably you don't see it.
No.
You don't see it till it's too late.
You don't see it till it's too late, mate. And like you said yourself, one split second, like what the situation that you were speaking about, and you end up looking at double figures in prison.
Mm.
For what? You know, for what? For looking up to a bunch of meat-headed lads who think they are something.
Mm-hmm.
And because maybe you think they're cool, I want to be like them, so when he phones me, I'm going to do what he says. You know what I mean? Forget about your family and forget about your life and forget about everything else. But because you think somebody's cool and because you look up to somebody else, once he rings you, then let's go running, let's go do what he says. But don't worry about your mum and dad sitting there. You know what I mean? So they're not nothing because, you know, this person you see walking around and driving around, sorry, in fancy cars, looking the business with all the fancy gear and big wads of money, that's your hero, you know, in their heads.
Yeah, but then people are sitting on a sofa, they hear a noise and they're like,
yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we call them blind twitchers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
blind twitchers.
And they're probably the ones with a scaffold board up against their door and their staircase to make sure no one comes through it.
Exactly, mate, yeah. And CCTV all around the house.
Mm-hmm.
And a CCTV is never for their protection.
Mm.
You know, it's always for, we don't want no one to steal the dogs.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or when I'm out of the house, I don't want anyone breaking into my house when my missus is there. It's never because I need that because I've done this and maybe he's going to call. You know what I mean? Well, I need that in case the police come and I want to grass somebody up, just like I've done to the 20 other lads. You know what I mean? Like all the rest of my mates who are stuck in jail at the minute. All stuck in prison over certain people who just use and abuse them, and then when it comes to the crunch, it's either them or them, and who are they going to choose? Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to point the finger and say, "Oh, he done it," you know. And a lot of my pals have made bad decisions, and they've ended up in prison all because the police has called them one of the big guys, and all because he doesn't want to take the rap for his the stuff he's done, and the rap for the stuff he's put people up to. The police go in and have a word with him, and he points a finger at this house and that house, and he walks away scot-free like a hero back to his family. Mm-hmm. And then all these young lads who you're looking up to and thinking he's Lord, thinking he's God's gift, get locked up and look at double figures. Mm-hmm. But when they get out of prison and they realise all that and they have a good think, they say to themselves, you know, it wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. And they always ring me up and say that to me. Well, why can't we just walk away? You know what I mean? All the time.
I've done nearly every single podcast that I've done with people that have served time, been in gangs, ex-affiliated, still in the game, that can't get out of the game. They all sit there and say, don't, I wish they never started.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like I said, mate, all it takes is for your phone to ring and someone say, "Here, big lad, you want to do me a favour?" And you go, "Yeah, what's up?" "Oh, you wouldn't go and do this." And then all of a sudden, that one phone call makes you involved in whatever that favour was. And then it's another favour. Mm-hmm. Then it's, "Do you want to go for dinner?" Then it's after, "Do you want to go for dinner? Do you want to go out for the night?" You know what I mean? To slowly, slowly lure you in. And that's how to do it back home in Ireland.
But this is how extensive it is when it comes to being a part of a group enterprise. One of the people that was convicted for the murder of my brother was on the phone in another town. He wasn't even at the event. He was on the phone telling them what to do.
There you go. Yeah.
And he got 18 years.
Full sentence.
He has to serve 18 before he can even apply for parole.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here, then again, well, he's just as bad, Paul, isn't he?
That's what I'm saying.
Do you know what I'm saying?
But these people that think I'm not there, so no face, no case.
Yeah.
They're so wrong.
You're an accessory. You know, they're so wrong. Mm. They're massively wrong. You're an accessory. If you're putting anyone up to doing anything else and you're involved in anything like that, no matter if you're even there, standing there watching, you know, and you're saying you're an accessory, you could be standing there watching somebody getting stabbed to death, or maybe someone getting plugged, or someone getting a good hiding and hospitalised, and you could be standing watching. But if the police see that and your face, you're an accessory, even though you say, "Oh, I was just there, it was nothing to do with me." It don't matter, mate. You know, it's either, why didn't you ring the police, or why didn't you stop it? You know, there's no excuses. Mm. You know, so you're an accessory, simple as. So he got the right serving, didn't he? Maybe actually he should have got more because he was using abusing people and putting.
I feel like he should have got more because if it wasn't for him, none of it would have happened.
Exactly.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So even though the person who did actually stab my brother, he got 22 full sentence.
Yeah.
Before the person who told him to do it should have had an easy match.
Yeah,
should have matched
easily
his sentence, matched, if not more.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was the main perpetrator, wasn't he? He was the main, as people say around here, shot caller.
Yeah, the shot caller.
You know, so he put him up to it. Yes, the lad was gullible enough, and the lad went and done what he done. You know what I mean? But that fella's the one, he put him up to it. Mm. You know what I mean? And in my eyes, that was teamwork.
Group enterprise,
it's teamwork. Mm. So, you know, he deserves more. You know, they both deserve a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, they both deserve as much as each other, to be honest with you, mate. And that's the truth, you know. And whether you're calling the shots or you're the runabout, you know, if you're doing it, you're doing it. If you're in it, you're in it. If you're watching it, you're in it still, you're involved, you know. So all these excuses that people make up, "Oh, I was just watching," or I was with him, but I didn't do nothing. Mm. It don't matter, mate. You know, it don't matter. You were there. Mm. You know, you were there. No, you seen someone putting the knife to my mum's throat. You seen that fella hit my mum. You know what I mean? You seen them lads jump me. You seen me getting stabbed. You see me getting gun put to me 6 times. You know what I mean? Oh, I know, but it was nothing to do with me. No, but you were involved with these lads. You know what I mean? You hung around with these lads. Mm-hmm. These were your friends. Carl, I know, but the stabbing was nothing to do with me. But they're your mates. You're involved with them. You know, you knew what was going on. You knew what was happening. So why didn't you inform me?
Yeah, give me a heads up.
Why didn't you give me a heads up? You know, there's no point now your arse going because I'm standing in front of you, punted on you. You know what I mean? Your arse can't go now, mate.
Can you tell us about the stabbing?
Yeah, I can do. Basically, I was out on a night out and I ended up going to one of my ex-girlfriend's houses. It was like a little village out of the local town, city where I am. And at the end of the house party I was at, it was about 2 a.m, and I was walking down the main road. It was like a country road, you know, and a car pulled up beside me at a fast pace, but it slammed on the brakes. It must have recognised me, you know, and two lads jumped out, but I only thought one jumped out. So what had happened is one lad had jumped out from the passenger seat, but another one jumped out from the back end, but he must have went round the car.
Yeah.
So the lad standing in front of me, I thought it was only me and him. So when he jumped out of the car, I says, right, okay. And me and him were fighting. And then after about 2 minutes into the fight, it must have felt, I felt like this, like just a quick, like, out of, like, as if someone just like kidney punched me or something, you know. And I felt it, and I turned around, and all of a sudden it was this lad running away. I didn't know where he came from, no. But it was like, obviously my adrenaline was going, I was angry, I was shouting, screaming. So I went back, I managed to get back to the house. I got back to the house, it was just on, probably just on adrenaline. Managed to get back to the house and was wearing a baby blue t-shirt. And I plonked myself, I went through the back door because my dad, they always gave me the key to the back door, you know what I mean? And it's not the front, always the back, because when the back door was getting open, they knew it was me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's come through the back door, so we know it's you, you know what I mean? That's the life we're living. So I came in through the back door and I plonked myself down on the kitchen seat. And I was just sitting there, froze, but I had a few drinks in me, Paul, you know? And my dad came down the stairs, obviously to see if everything's okay. And the blue t-shirt I was wearing was just red, you know. And what it was, when I got to the hospital, they filled up a syringe full of water to see how deep the wound was, and they squirted it in. It was a blunt screwdriver. So what it was, he'd run up behind me, and the doctor said he'd plunged a blunt screwdriver into me back. No, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what the doctor says that it was like 2 centimeters away from one of my organs in my back, on my side, my bottom left, and he plunged in, and then he ran away. But before I got the, I didn't even know he was there.
Did he leave it in?
No, he pulled it out. So it was like a quick puncher. That's why I thought it was like a kidney shot, because it was just a quick in and out.
Mm.
Because he knew if he jumped in the fight, he knew it was gonna maybe turn around and have a go with him, because it was giving his mate, well, both of them, he could have jumped in and had a scrap with me with nothing, because it was me and his mate was already fighting, so he could have jumped on my back, he could have jumped and gave me a slight dig from behind.
Yeah, yeah.
But what he'd just done, he dirty joked me. I think it was to make it like kind of like a statement, you know, oh, I got caught, you know, I sorted him, you know. But now I managed to get home and then to put that syringe of water in it, and it was about 2 centimeters away from one of my main things from the side. And then we got back, but they couldn't stitch it up because it was, they called it a blunt trauma, because it was used by a rusty star headed screwdriver.
Yeah.
So they says that if he would have came and he would have done you with a kitchen knife, it would have sliced in and out. So obviously you can stitch it.
Yeah.
But because it had came in like that, it didn't go in and out like that. It went like that and pushed my skin, and then it pushed and popped.
Yeah.
And then like it's the screwdriver like struggled its way through my back, and then it ripped out. So what all they could do was like glue it. They could do nothing with it, and that was it. They called it a blunt trauma. And it says that it was because it was they found out by the shape and the way it was a star headed screwdriver. It was rusty. And they had to do like all them antiseptic shots and all that, the cleaning out. And it was a horrible experience, mate. It was really horrible. And that was a wake-up call. And I think that was one of the reasons why my dad said, son, no, you can't go around drinking in this position you're in. Because at this stage when I was doing, in that position, You know, I was going out and drinking because I was off. I wasn't off the rails, but that's the way I was controlling.
Yeah.
With my mates still, you know, like not caring really. Mm. You know, like okay, well, I'm here, let's go, kind of attitude. Yeah. But you know, fair enough. The lads caught me slipping. Yeah, and like chickens they are. They jumped out of a car, dirty. One dirty Joe, me jumped in the back of a car. I jumped back in the car and drove off. But I managed to walk home, you know what I mean? The next day I was on the phone, ringing around everyone, finding out who it was. And eventually we found out who it was. Well, I didn't. My dad did. He got in touch with one of the lads who I was with at this point. Dad was running down from the top of the road. He'd just missed it. And my dad got in touch with him the next day and said, yo, what happened to our kid last night? And my mate knew the fella who was driving the car. So obviously he got dealt with and heard nothing back from it. But it was a pretty nasty time, I think. Out of everyone who's more scared about the situation, Paul, it's my mum. You know, my dad was like, right, son, you know, we were expecting this, if not worse. So this is what it is.
Did they say, do you know the reason why they did it?
They didn't say, the reason why, and the reason is why is the fella got what done to him because I know why he done it, but he never admitted it still to this day. He still doesn't admit it. And actually kind of like, actually speak to the fella now, not on a friendly basis, but I'd pass myself on social media and stuff. And it was basically, as I'm telling you, the guy who's dead now, who got shot 6 times, he had put him up to it again. So he had sent another one of his little cronies out, because like I told you, there's 40, 45 of them. And he's putting everyone on me, trying to do me. And none of them could just couldn't break the barrier. He couldn't mentally, physically break me. Or they couldn't physically break me, so they're trying to mentally break me. So he was just putting everyone he could out to try and do what they could, and that's the best he had. The best he had was some little kid with a hood up running, jumping out of the back of a car, plunging me with a dirty screwdriver, and running away back in the car and driving off. And that was their claim of fame. That was their trophy for the year. You know, there's 20 quid, lads, go buy yourself a carry out.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean?
Them lads are probably buzzing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the biggest men in the country now. We've got so much respect. Nah, listen, lads, you're a bunch of cards, you know what I mean? If you want to have a problem, just ring up the phone and say, listen, this is the way it is, and I'll come and meet you, or just come and meet me, or whatever. Knock on my door, like old times. But you actually know.
You always find with a lot of people that claim that they're about the life, or they're, they are.
In it.
Yeah, are normally the ones that run up and do it when you're not expecting it. You know, not none of this like meet me, we'll have a straightener, like this is it, or come to your door and just say like.
Exactly, mate. You're right. That's like I said earlier on. The lads who actually are in it and actually are in the deep end and in the guts of it are the men who don't speak about it. Is the men who's sitting in the pubs by themselves, so maybe one or two people. And letting on to be completely oblivious of what's going on, you know. So, like the top man could be sitting in a pub back home in Ireland, and a couple of young lads go in and boast and be all big headed and doing what they're saying. And that old man could have 10 sons and a handful of grandsons who's all top heavy men.
Mm-hmm.
This great granddad sitting in a pub, but you get a couple of young lads in because they've done a bit of graft for. Some idiot come in thinking a big man, and the old man's probably sitting there in the background laughing his balls off, saying, you know, I dare one of you to call me an old prick or something, you know what I mean? And I bet you some old men are back home are itching and or else crawling in their skin, seeing the way that the lads are getting on now with their attitude, you know what I mean? Because of what they done and what they fought for and the way they behaved in them days, and they see the people the way they're getting on now, gloating them and boasting about it. The old men are probably sitting there disgusted with their nose turned up, you know, but they're the real men you've got to watch out for. You know what I mean? They're the real men what would come into your house, plug you in the head and go home and have Sunday dinner with the family and take off the coat, throw it in a burner and set a light and walk back in the house and sit and have dinner with their kids on a Sunday. And maybe go to mass that evening. You know what I mean? They're the men there you want to be afraid of.
And a lot of the people that are the elders from that you wouldn't even mess with like back in the day, they all turn around and said, I asked them a simple question. If you could do it all again, but now, with the mentality, the way the kids are now, would you still do it? And they said, no.
No.
Said, because there's not the street code anymore.
No, there's not.
So that's all gone.
It's all gone.
The gentleman side of...
Yeah, the gentleman side, the loyalty side, the old school way of dealing with things is all gone now. No, these lads now, Paul, you have a newborn baby in the house, and you could have the newborn baby in the living room. And the lads nowadays won't think twice, put back through a living room window with your newborn baby and behind the window, and them knowing that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the morals these people have nowadays.
Now, the new people, they don't want to listen to the old ways because they think they've got it all. And they've sussed everything.
Yeah.
And now you've got private educated kids coming from good backgrounds where parents are together their whole life working, serving 20 years because someone said, if someone does something to you, stab them from the hip up.
From the waist up, it's attempted murder, isn't it?
So
you're right. And people nowadays, and like you're saying yourself, with their parents and stuff, they're putting their kids out there because the world's turned that bad. The parents are basically teaching the kids to do stuff like that because they know...
Well, they inherit the hate.
Yeah.
They inherit the name because... There's a lot of, you got to remember now, when our parents had us, they were quite older.
Yeah.
Now you've got kids having kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is they haven't got past that maturity mentality where they're starting to understand that the problem is with me and you.
Yeah.
They're not going to carry that. I'm not going to give that problem to my child to then carry on against your child.
No.
Or you. You know what I mean? So
that's it. Yeah. So the problem, they bring it on. The problem just drags. It extends, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, and I've realised that with a lot of families, it's like, you know, beef, some people's beef never squashes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, just because something happened to, like, your granddad, it doesn't mean it has to be passed down to yourself.
Yeah.
Well, it's just because, like, your granddad or my granddad was a certain way, it doesn't mean we have to be that way.
Yeah.
We all have our own brains. It's just what we choose and who we choose to decide to listen to. Yeah. And that's where I'm grateful that I listen to my dad and my mum and listen to the old school ways and listen to the intelligent ways of doing things. Because my dad was no saint himself, Paul, to be honest. He's a pretty bad man growing up himself until he had me change his life around. So that's how I know he was no bullshitter because I heard a lot of stories about him myself when I was growing up, you know, but I didn't see it in my dad because it's my dad, you know, so I didn't see it in him. But, you know, even my mum said, no, my dad was one of the hardest men in the town, if not the hardest man in the local town he lived in. He could, and all his mates, 7, 8, 9, 10 of his mates even told me when they were meeting me when I came to England, I says, oh, your dad, he was one tough man in back in the day. Telling me stories of fighting, you know, when he was like getting into like old school street fights, and then they're saying to me, oh, your daddy's a tough man. It wasn't just one or two people saying this, it was 8, 9, 10, 11 people saying this, you know. So, I never really believed my dad, to be honest with you, Paul, for quite a long time until I heard it coming out of a lot of people's mouths, and then I was like, hold on a second. But what made me did believe him was everything he told me to do. Whenever I was in that them sticky situations and whenever I was that close to doing something very bad that I shouldn't be doing, or whenever I was that close to being locked up, whenever I got in them situations and he said, son, take a step back, think about it, you know what I mean? And that's when I done that. Then when stuff started falling into place and he used to like predict the future, he used to say, right, son, you think, that's going to tell you what, this is going to happen, he's going to do this, that's going to happen, he's going to go there, he's going to just screw him over. He's going to screw him over for money. He's going to go to prison for him. He's going to run away with her. He's going to do this. And I sit back and go, smile nuts. But tell you what, every time he used to predict these things, I sit back and it was always right.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he said, son, he's going to do him over. Or son, he's going to do him for his money. Or he's going to use him. Mark my words. And every time he used to say it about certain people who I was involved in, or else was involved in that circle that I was in, I used to sit back, and he was always right. I used to sit back and watch. I say, he's right. And then again, he's right. And again, he's right. Then that's how I started believing him, because everything he said was right. And then that was whenever it was like, when it got sticky, like I told you, that's why my trust was so strong in my dad, because I believed he was always right. He was always right in these situations. So, you know, whenever we planned to stand up for ourselves against these manipulative men, then me and my old man really took it to town on them, and we stuck together as a team. And my mum as well, one of the strongest women I know, if not the strongest woman, because at the end of the day, if they remember, it's all right for us going out and doing what we're doing, or sticking together, or else doing the dirty part of it, me and my old man. But my mum had to mentally listen to us, mentally mentally get have the police come through a door 3-4 times a week, mentally exploring the pain what I was getting put through, what her husband was getting put through, what was happening to her home, her pride and joy was getting smashed up 4 or 5 times a week. You know, the police were coming through a door 3-4 times a week. No, my mum was going, but we didn't think about that because we were more of the physical side. But my mum was, she's strong too, because she had to, her pride and joy, which is a woman's house, was getting ruined over this, me making the situations I made with the wrong people, whilst the wrong people trying to get involved in my life when they shouldn't have been there in the first place. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was all over because I was a handy lad. That was it. And because I said no. Because I said no, and because I was a handy lad, he didn't like the word no.
Yeah.
And he hated it. And I said no on the phone, no. To his face, no. And he'd done nothing about it because he didn't have the balls. He didn't have the heart. All he could do was break windows at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're sleeping. That's burn out your motor. That's your old man's car at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're sleeping. That's pay some little kid a carry out to go and put a brick through your window whenever you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's why, and that's all they're really capable of. Until just because the bigger boys that he was involved with didn't want any of it because they knew it was pointless. But he's just trying to throw his weight around. But it never worked.
Mm.
It never worked. Clearly it never worked because I'm sitting here talking to you.
If
it worked, I wouldn't be sitting here speaking
exactly,
to you.
Exactly.
You know, so at the end of the day, like I always look at it, and for everyone listening, you know, saying no to these people will make you a winner. You'll come out.
With being back into the UK and this new fresh life that you've gone for.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got your mum and your dad here as well, right?
Yeah, both of them.
That's good, man. How's life treated you since you've been here?
Great, mate. Unbelievable. Couldn't ask for it any better. You know, at the start, you know, finding my feet in England is pretty tough, as it is anywhere you go. Like, if you're to move away, you know, it's hard to find your feet. But once you find your feet, you find the right friends, and you find the loyal friends who's willing to help you explore England and explore and help with your future, to help you in life, basically get by. Once and now I've found them and stuff, I'm doing very, very good, mate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've got my door badge, you know, as you probably might have seen on a few of my Instagram posts or whatever. I got my door badge. So I've been looking after a few people. I done the Misha B concert, looked after her. I done Pink, looked after her with a security team with Stevie Nixon. I done 50 Cent when he went to, we travelled from here over to back into the old stomping ground in Belfast. Yeah, with Stevie Nixon, one of my bosses. We done him. And then we done the band Bastille.
Yeah.
I wasn't within the Bastille, but so that's where I'm at now, is getting on with my work. Now my life's planted and I'm going straight forward. I'm helping Dougie and that out with the 3D Fight Club. So I'm helping them lads out. Bit of a face in with them guys. Doing a lot of the security work, you know, I'm looking after the lads, you know, with the dogs as well.
Stuff
like that. And just all positive stuff now, mate. All positive. So just friends, good friendship, good strong family base now, you know, back into the security business, you know, looking after good faces, good rich faces, which is hard to come by, mate, you know, because you have to go through your plan, you have to have yourself, you have to have yourself a close protection course and that, £6,000.
So you
have to, your SAA badge for 6 years. Then once you get your SAA badge, you pay £6,000 to get your close protection. Once you get that, there you're flying. So now I've got that, I'm looking after. Well, I've looked after a few celebs and a few big faces, which I'm pretty proud of because of what I came from.
Yeah, it's a massive difference in you, within your life.
It's a massive difference, mate. I tell you what, all in the space of such a small period of time, because I'd had my SAA badge over in Ireland. I just couldn't really swindle with it because of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So because of what was going on, where I was living, I couldn't work in certain places or do certain things, because once anyone got the gist of it, they were at the door and they were just causing mayhem. And I was done it over there for at least a good 3-4 years with a team called Event CFNI. I worked with them guys, but like I said, the people were calling at the club and stuff, and You had work and they were trying to offer you out, and they knew you couldn't do nothing, you know? But now I moved here, basically now I'm here, mate, it's just solid friends, solid friendship, close protection, looking after people, you know what I mean? Just walk around tonight and Dougie's asked me to keep my eye on the place and look after him and his family and that lot, which I will do. I keep my head in the background, keep my eyes open, you know, because he knows what I'm about, you know what I mean? So it's like you said, you don't need to run around and gloat about it or tell anyone what you are. If you are something, people will hear or people will come and approach you, you know? So I'm just helping the lads out, and my mate Garvin, a good friend of mine now, you know, me and him's type, we're just making good friendships, and I'm really getting somewhere now, mate, which feels good, you know?
Yeah, I'm really glad. I'm really glad for you. You're a decent guy, you know?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
You know, from the first reach out when you sent me, like I said, when you sent me my birthday message.
Yeah, I just
thought to myself, what a decent guy, you know?
Yeah, like I said, I've always been a big fan of watching yourself and just and your Instagram and stuff and your tattooing especially, mate. I love your tattooing.
I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely love it. It's right up my street, plenty of style, so... That's why I've had a bit of a soft touch for you, because I listened to your story and that too. It was heartbreaking listening to it, because I've known people in certain situations. It's not very nice, mate. So after that, there, I followed you a bit on Instagram and your tattooing and that. And then once we got in contact, once you started speaking, and then he gave me this opportunity and asked me to come on. I said, yeah, 100% I will. There's many other podcasters had asked me to come on as well. No, three or four before, but, you know, I said, Paul's coming first, because at the end of the day, you know, it's he's doing a favour for me, I do a favour for him. No one needs to know about that, but that's just the way the
connection,
lads roll.
It's connection, mate.
It's connection. 100% connection. You know, you have connection with people in different ways, but some ways, like me and yourself, we have more connections as brothers, as friends, as... We could see each other inside out. You know, we know what each other's about.
Yeah.
Where some connections, you just, you know.
Still, I'm wary of the person.
Yeah, you keep.
Are you showing me something that, like, you're just trying to show me the fake you to make me like you?
Yeah.
But really, all you've got to do is be yourself, and you'll be surprised how many people will click with you like that.
100%. That's all what happened to me when I came to England here. I just been myself. And, you know, I met all the lads just being myself and everybody without even having to run around and. Like, I could have led on to be anyone. I've been an idiot and fired my weight around, but I've done far from that. And I got good opportunities with some good people, you know, and working beside some good men, doing all different things, not just the close protection, not just the doors. You know, I'm looking after people in, like, events, like a 3D fight club. You know, I'm looking after people in bare knuckle events, festivals. You know, I do everything like that, all security work. Because I have the experience, Paul, I have the background, you know, I have the guts and I have the brain, I have the street brain and the knowledge to spot these things coming. So a lot of people hire me for the brains and also the muscle and bustle to be able to get these people away, the trouble causes, as people call them, you know.
Yeah, you switched on. I mean, when you come through the door, I mean, we'd spoken a lot over FaceTime and stuff. We've had like 40-minute conversations on FaceTime together, just going at it. But when I see you today for the first time and I see you come in, I can see you switched on. You was looking around, you were seeing what's about, you know.
Yeah.
And I could see that you was definitely made for that job.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And to be fair, I should thank Aaron for that, because it gave me that that guard and that... to know what people's, how evil people are, and what people are like, to be able to have my wits about me, you know. So like you said, you see me walking in earlier and the first thing I do is have a quick look around. So I know who's where. I know he's there. I know he's there. I know my mate's there. I know my other mate's there. He's safe. He's staying over there. I know he's over there. So if anything happens, I know where everyone is.
I know that door's shut. I know that one's open behind me.
Exactly, And so people that do to hire me from... Some people, especially on the doors, like to have streetwise men working for them, because they can spot the individuals and the trouble causers coming a mile away.
Yeah,
and I'm very good at that, mate. I'm a very good judge of character, because I've lived that lifestyle, you know, and I've been around these people all my life.
Yeah,
I've been around some serious men. You know, serious men who got out the Good Friday Agreement, you know, which is for killing Catholics and Protestants. So these men are evil serial killers. Maybe 30 bodies under their names. You know, and I'm sitting in a company drinking, so I need to have my wits about me.
If not,
I'll probably end up the same place I'm over 30 people have. You know what I mean? I don't want that. So, Ireland's made me have my wits about me. So a lot of people have brought me along. Like Dougie himself, you know, because I have my wits about me, I'm a good lad. And like last night, for example, we went out for, well, I don't drink myself, Paul, to be honest. So,
same.
Yeah, so yeah, last night we went out and it's non-alcoholic ones. We're just having them now, but we went out and I was just keeping an eye on Dougie's old man. He was out with his Johnny and I was sitting beside him keeping an eye on everyone and just making sure that, you know, he's, I'm just making sure he can handle himself, but that's just in me.
It's in me
to protect the people.
And it's amazing that when you do go out and don't drink, how much you do actually
notice.
See.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. You notice a lot of stuff.
And then, you know, and I'm sure your dad would be the first one to say, like, you know, if you're drunk, like, don't go out and get wasted when you've got people that are trying to get you.
What that. Another perfect example. That's what he was trying to drill into me the whole time. And what did I do? Go out and get a story of the screwdriver plunged into my back.
Yeah.
And when I got home, he didn't have no remorse because he knew it was.
I told you so.
Yes, that's what he said. Yeah. He said, "What did I tell you, son? You know, what did I tell you?" Mm. And he's sitting in the hospital with his arms folded, you know, as if to say, you know, I looked at him and it looked like he wanted to strangle me, Homer Simpson. Are you stupid?
Yeah.
You know, but no, that's just the way it was. So. A lot of people have hired me for my brains, Paul, and I'm a strapping lad too, so I can handle myself. Mm. And I've done 12, 13 years of boxing all my life, and I also vetted to coach kids and stuff in boxing, which I have done. I've done that for 4 years. After I quit boxing, before I could have turned semi-pro, I coached kids for 4 years, under 10s, boxing, kids like, and it was fun. I really enjoyed it. So I've got my level 1, 2, 3 boxing coaching course since I've moved to England. I'm invited to coach kids since I've moved to England. I've had a bunch of friends since I've moved to England. A positive lifestyle with my mum and dad safe and happy. Mm-hmm. I've a part-time job running the doors, helping lads do security events quite often. All this since I've moved to England because I've said no and because me and my family stood up to the people who was trying to get me rolled into the bad ways. All because I said no. I said, "You ain't getting me." You know what I mean? I'm going down this way.
Yeah.
You're going that way. I'm going this way. No matter what you do to me, I'm going that way.
Positive always leads you to prosper.
And look now, and like I just said, all these things I've worked hard for since I stepped off that boat and I stepped into England. And I've got everything that I always wished for when I'm growing up in school. I've got it all now. Good, solid friends. We're in the security business, what I've always wanted to do. You know, what kid doesn't watch a film and see the bouncers and see
Roadhouse.
Like a roadhouse. You know what I mean? I want to be like that, you know. So, you know, and go to the gym and lift some weights and do some boxing training. Just be a typical boy a typical man, you know. You know what I mean? Like be a typical man, but I'm a boy in a man's body. That's what I am. That's what me and all the lads are. We're just a bunch of like boys in men's body. Just want to have fun. And ever since I moved here, mate, like I said, everything's just so positive and so good. And my family's all safe. All my mates are happy. And we're just smashing it now. And it's real. I'm making new friends every day. And everyone's seeing the real me, which is finally because now I'm not.
Since you're free, isn't it?
Since I'm freed, Paul, thank you. So now I'm not living over in Ireland with a guard up. They're not trusting no one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, attacking the first person comes near me because I think they're doing me wrong, or else I walk into a room and someone gives me a dirty look, and if all of a sudden I think, well, he's something to do with them. Whack. That's how what it was. An instant one dirty look and it was on.
Yeah.
You know, because I was walking around with my guard up, you know, my hair's my back, waiting for something to happen. But now I'm here and I know what the lads are like. I know how loyal everyone is here. Well, the people I've chose to be around me, you know, everything's just opened up in life.
Yeah.
Work, friends, you know, meeting new people, happy family. Everything's just opened up in life. And I couldn't be any happier now that I stepped foot off that boat in England.
I'm absolutely buzzed for you, mate.
Thank you very much, mate.
I'm glad to call you a friend now.
And yeah, same to you.
We're always going to be in contact, for sure. 100%.
Always, mate. This is only part one of my story, Paul.
Yeah.
There's a part two, and you'll get it as well.
Yeah, we're going to cover
that. There's a massive part two, so there is, because that's only a blink of just the bad side what I got off some certain stubborn enemies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But We'll cover some good quality content, and we'll definitely get it booming. And
Yeah, 100%.
yeah, of course. And you know what I put out today is just a tester to yourself of the experience that I had to endure living back home with my family on edge, ready to cause mayhem, all because of trying to be pushed into a lifestyle what my family and myself didn't want to live, you know, and saying no. But all I can say to anyone watching, like I said earlier, is if you've really got something and got something in your heart, you don't want to do it, tell them no. No matter how big or no matter how strong or no matter how tall you are, tell them no and go your own destination, your own destiny, and go and find it and go and do what you love to do. Don't be sucked in with people with big fancy cars and big fat wallets and loads of women around them. You know, it doesn't. That's not life. That's fantasy. That's fantasy. And people, the quicker the teenagers growing up now realize that, the better. You know what I mean? Because it's the wrong. It's the wrong. It's only going down two roads, either dead or in prison.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, you know, because one of the things that I try and put across there with my channel is, you know, just that none of it's worth it. And you think you're somebody until you're all alone in a cell
One hundred
by
percent.
yourself,
By
while
yourself.
everyone else outside is carrying on.
Yeah.
You know,
Yep.
your girl has gone off with your friend, your
Yeah.
kid's being brought up by somebody else being called someone dad, you know,
Yep.
or you've gone to jail and you've served a big sentence and you ain't got the opportunity to have a child, so your
Yeah.
blood, the end of your bloodline
Bloodline
stops. It
stops. It
stops.
stops totally
There is nothing
dead.
left. Is it worth it?
Yeah, that's it. There's so many consequences, mate. Like you said, the negative consequences all over something so unnecessary. Like, it's not worth it one
No,
bit.
and there's people that have gone to jail that their children have died whilst they've been in jail. They've not been able to go to the funeral. Their parents have died.
Yep.
Their grandparents have died. They've not been able to go to a funeral.
No.
You know, like
Yeah.
the. You know, when you go to jail, you're in jail. They can't say, "Oh, my mum's not well. I've got to go and see her." It ain't
Exactly.
that. You're in
No.
jail. That's where you are.
Yeah, and especially like you said, on that subject too, when the lads are in jail and you get a phone call, it's your missus saying that, say your kid's sick or whatever, you can't say to screw knock the door and say, oh, my son's in hospital or my daughter's in hospital, is it okay if I go visit them? You know, you have to live for the rest of your life or whatever years or whatever months you have in that cell or that, even the rest of that night or the rest of them hours, thinking about what's happening on the outside. So it's not worth it one bit. The amount of people you leave behind in a negative, horrible way, all over your selfish actions. You know what I mean? For what reason? There's no reason at all. There's no excuse. There's no excuse. No matter how people try and milk it, or no matter how people try and glitter and glam it, there's no excuse for going out there, out in the street, and getting into an argument or a fight, and doing something you shouldn't be doing, and walking away. You know what I mean? There's no excuse for going out there and stabbing someone. There's no excuse. There's no. You can't justify that. There's no excuse for going out there and shooting someone. You can't justify that.
Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you've got the power to
Ex
do it, you know?
exactly. And if you do that, then think of the consequences. And the consequences is a list that length. It's the rest
That's
of your
one of the
life.
things. When I was going doing with the things that I was doing, I never ever thought about how people felt after I'd done it until it happened to me. And then that was a whole brand new feeling that made me just change everything.
That's it. I think that's what it takes sometimes for some people to open up their eyes. Is
It's a hard lesson, though.
it's a hard lesson, mate. It definitely is. You're like that engrossed in the stuff yourself. It's me, 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 me. And obviously you don't think about no one else around you. It's what you want, and it's how much money you want to have, and it's what car you want to drive. But you're not thinking about your mom or your dad or your family or your wife or your kids or nothing like that. You're just in that selfish rage of anger of me mode, and it gets you nowhere, nowhere at all. You know, the best advice I can say to most people is, you know, have a few beers and sort it out, or whatever you do, and go back to your wife and kids and be happy and live the rest of your life in peace. You know, definitely don't live the life that me and my old man and me mum were living back in Ireland. And if you are, stand your ground and be the bigger person, and maybe consider living somewhere else where you can live in peace with your family. Because is your family and your life really worth losing over a bunch of nobodies who's going to end up dead or in prison anyway? No, it's not, mate. Definitely not. So just say no and walk away, you know. And if that means moving country for a better life, then do so. You know?
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you coming on
Well, thank
today.
you
It
very
really means a
much.
lot to
Yeah, I
me.
appreciate
And
you having
you
me,
know, the
Paul.
channel's gonna, you know, accept you with open arms and just
Thank you.
understand your message. It's really appreciated, honestly, because
Yeah.
the people that do watch are the ones that want to listen. They want to
Yeah.
hear people the truth. They want to hear the truth.
Yeah, of
And the
course they do.
truth is, don't even bother starting getting into that lifestyle.
No, don't start it.
Yeah.
Once that phone rings, and someone says, and it's someone that you're a bit wary of, or they're not your friend, and it's can you do me a favor? Or here, I need a favor. Say no.
If it's a cup of sugar, yes.
Yes, if
If
it's a
it,
cup of sugar,
if I'm gonna
yes.
lose time or give my family grief,
Yes.
no, you gotta, you know, just do your thing,
No,
but just don't get me
you're
involved.
right.
Brother, thank you so
Thank you
much.
very
No, I
much,
really
Paul.
appreciate it. Like, I really
No,
do. Thank you so
anytime, mate.
much.
Come on your show, anytime. Whenever you lift the phone, mate, I'll be there for you. No
Thank
matter
you.
what it is, always be there for you, brother.
Same, brother.
Thank
Thank
you
you.
very much, mate.